Hello and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Reviews. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum,
Matt Levine,
and we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time. Kaiju, creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between, all strange beasts welcome here. Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of the proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com. Hit the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. Hey, as Camp Kaiju says, stay campy, everybody.
Son of Godzilla from 1967, Toho Studios.
Totally new to this movie. Like, I, you know, of course, because of this podcast that we're doing, which I have loved, and we've been doing it, you know, you invited me on about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, like, this has been a great excuse to, like, get me into, like, the history of kaiju movies, because, like, I love horror, I love a lot of different kinds of cinema, but, like, Godzilla had been kind of like a blank spot for me, you know, a blind spot, that's the word I'm looking for. So yeah, I had never seen Son of Godzilla. I knew that it was in kind of like the period of Godzilla, the Godzilla franchise, when, like, things were starting to get a little bit more, they were trying to find a wider audience. I guess I'll just say that at this point. That's all I knew about it. Yeah. What's your history with the movie?
Well, I came at this film later in life, like many of the classic Showa era Godzilla films. And I understood the criticisms of Manila, the titular son. However, it's weird. Like, I both love and hate this movie at the same time. For some reason, it's one that I have watched often. If I need a good movie to just throw on in the background, I'll just throw this one on. I think it has a lot to do with its tone and its pacing that we'll get into. But yeah, I've seen it more than a few times.
That kind of surprises me. Now I'm kind of excited to rewatch it at some point in the future.
It's wildly different than, like, Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster.
Yeah, and I love Ghidorah. Yeah, it is. It's very different than pretty much all the other Godzilla movies that I've seen, and that's not always a good thing. I guess I'll just say that at this point.
All right, I think we're going to, you and I are going to reflect the general consensus of the world.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, hey, thanks for hanging out. Before we dive deeper into Son of Godzilla, we want to plug a couple of things. We have a Patreon. For as low as $5 a month, you get great bonus content. We just recorded an episode about the 1910 Frankenstein from Edison Studios, of all things. So that's like a 20-minute discussion on early cinema history. So that and more is available for $5 a month.
We have various levels of Patreon. So if you do more than $5 a month, there are stickers. There are other special events that might be forthcoming in the future. So
Ooh, sure.
So take a look at that. Check out our website in general. We have some reviews of the films that we talk about in the podcast. You know, we have some lists on there as well. Lists for, you know, best monster movies for Halloween, things like that. So lots of good stuff on there. And a lot of fun stuff coming up over the next month or two. Do you want to talk about any of that, Vincent?
Sure. In December, we are partnering with one of my favorite podcasts called Gays Do the D. Our friend Patrick Kozicki, local Twin Cities. He lives in Minnesota, but this guy is the biggest Disney fan I know. He's always in Orlando, hitting up the theme parks, running marathons, and then recording news and updates, not just about Disney movies, but Disney culture and Disney the parks and all that. Well, he and I were talking, and we'd love to do a crossover event. We're going to talk about the Pixar Disney animated feature Luca from 2021. And then we're going to kick it old school. We're going to talk about the 1954 live action Disney film 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which I've never seen either of those movies, but I'm very excited and intrigued by both the stories and the talent involved.
Yeah, I'm super excited, and I have seen Luca before. It's great, and I think it's going to be a really good conversation, especially to have with Patrick as well. And you know, I think we're excited about future collaborations too, because we, you know, I love having these conversations with you, Vincent, but like the more the merrier. So hopefully we'll kind of team up with some other podcasts and some other film critics and theorists down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll throw it out to anyone listening. If you have any ideas or suggestions about your other favorite monster movie podcasts, yeah, we're open to any sort of crossover or featured guest hosts. Yeah, just shout us out on Instagram or the website, and we'll get back to you. We're pretty easygoing, guys.
Indeed.
Okay, awesome. Plot synopsis for Son of Godzilla. Let's just get into it. I'll start. A team of scientists are trying to perfect a weather-controlling system on remote Solgel Island. Their efforts are hampered by the arrival of a nosy reporter named Goro and by the sudden presence of giant praying mantises. The first test of the weather control system goes awry when the remote control for a radioactive balloon is jammed by an unexplained signal coming from the center of the island. The balloon detonates prematurely, creating a radioactive storm that causes the giant mantises to grow to enormous sizes.
Investigating the mantises, the scientists find them digging an egg out from under a pile of earth. The egg hatches, revealing a baby Godzilla named Manila. The scientists realize that the baby's telepathic cries for help were the cause of the interference that ruined their experiment. Shortly afterwards, Godzilla arrives on the island in response to the infant's cries, demolishing the scientists' base while rushing to defend the baby. Godzilla kills two of the Kamakuras, which is the name of the giant praying mantises, during the battle, while one manages to fly away to safety. Godzilla then takes the baby under its proverbial wing.
The baby Godzilla, aka Manila, quickly grows to about half the size of the adult Godzilla, and Godzilla teaches it the important monster skills of roaring and using its atomic ray. At first, Manila has difficulty producing anything more than atomic smoke rings, but Godzilla discovers that stressful conditions produce a radioactive blast. Manila comes to the aid of Psycho, a woman who has lived on the island alone since the death of her archaeologist father when she was attacked by a Kamakuras. Their clash awakens Komunga, and in the English dub version, Komunga is called Spiga. Anyways, Komunga is a giant spider that was sleeping in a valley. Komunga attacks the caves where the scientists are hiding, and Manila stumbles into the fray.
Komunga traps Manila and the final Kamakuras in its web, but then Godzilla arrives. Godzilla saves Manila, and they work together to defeat Komunga by using their atomic rays. Hoping to keep the monsters from interfering in their attempt to escape the island, the scientists finally use their perfected weather-altering device on the island, which becomes buried in snow and ice. As the scientists are rescued by a submarine, Godzilla and Manila begin to hibernate as they wait for the island to become tropical again.
Yeah, it's a pretty lean film in terms of plot. Like I said, though, I think it really moves despite that. But yeah, I think it's helped by the cast, especially. There's a lot of familiar faces to Godzilla fans of this time period. The film is also directed by Jun Fukuda, who is returning to the Godzilla franchise. He had directed the previous film, Ebera, Horror of the Deep, which was also set on an island. Have you seen that one, Matt?
I have not. I would love to.
It's fun. It also has like a spy ring subplot going on, tapping into that, you know, espionage zeitgeist of the 60s. Let me know what you think. I would rate it a tier below Son of Godzilla.
Whoa, okay.
But I don't know. I don't know any Ebra fans out there, but...
Sorry, I didn't mean to interject there, but Jun Fukuda also directed Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla, which we've talked about on the podcast before, and also has that kind of like espionage kind of vibe a little bit. So I'm not too surprised to hear that. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Well, because we've talked about Ishiro Honda a lot. I think this is our first Fukuda Godzilla film. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts about Fukuda compared to Honda now or as we continue the conversation.
Definitely. At this point, I'll just say that Honda has directed all of my favorite Godzilla movies that I've seen, including the original and also Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster. So I feel like my allegiance is with Ishiro Honda, but I would love to check out more Jun Fukuda films as well.
Same. Did you want to talk about special effects or?
Yeah, definitely. So the special effects are by Sadamasa Arikawa. He kind of handled the special effects, but he was under the mentorship of Eiji Tsuburaya, who had done a lot of the special effects for previous Godzilla films. Tsuburaya was kind of working simultaneously on another Toho film and had just started his own special effects company a year beforehand. So he was a very busy guy, but still had time to kind of oversee the special effects on this film.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good too. I didn't realize that the screenwriter of Son of Godzilla was a woman, was a female screenwriter.
Indeed, Kazue Shiba. I think she co-wrote it, or she wrote the first draft of the script, and then it was kind of reworked by Shinichi Sekizawa, who had, I think, worked on quite a few Godzilla films before this one. And from what I read, was kind of sick of it. I think he, you know, as far as I know, he kind of told Toho that he didn't really want to work on another Godzilla script. And then they made him like work on this script anyway, on the draft that Kazue Shiba had written. So it was kind of the two of them working in tandem to come up with the finished film that we see here.
I'm going to bring up Kazue Shiba in a second when I bring up the character of Psycho. Or as it's pronounced in the English dub, Raiko. Did you catch that?
I did. Yeah, there are a lot of things that are not the same as far as I could tell in the English dub and in the original Japanese language version.
Yeah, and Manila is also known as Minya. You'll see that name used interchangeably as well.
And even the name of like the praying mantises and the spider are different, which seems needlessly confusing but interesting.
Okay, so in the film, as Goro, our protagonist, I would call him our main character. It's Akira Kubo. He is returning. This guy was just in so many great classic Toho monster movies at the time, starting with a film called Matango. Have you heard of this movie, Matt?
I have not, no.
You would love it. It is also known as Attack of the Mushroom People.
Whoa.
So Akira Kubo, he's on a yacht pleasure cruising with some other people, and they run aground on a mysterious island. But the mysterious island is infected, of course, with radiation. And there are people, there's like a colony of people who are mutants. They've fused with the mushroom flora on the island. And these mushroom people are coming after the people on the yacht to like bring them into their mushroom colony.
That sounds amazing. Wow.
Also Ishiro Honda. And what I love about it is it's more of a horror film than an outright monster film. And it just is whetted my appetite for Japanese horror films from that time period.
Oh man, I can't wait. I'm already kind of scared of mushrooms. I find them like very creepy and like disgusting. So,
really?
Yeah. So I feel like I would be very affected by that movie.
Okay. Let me know when you watch it. I'll come over.
Cool. That sounds great. Yeah.
Okay. Mushroom people tangent aside, Akira Kubo was also an Invasion of Astro Monster, Space Amoeba, which maybe we'll get to one day, and Destroy All Monsters. He is co-starring alongside Tadeo Takashima as Professor Kasumi. This guy was in King Kong vs. Godzilla. He was in Atragon. He was in Frankenstein Conquers the World. And then, so those are all in the 60s. Then in the 1993, I believe, he was in Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2.
Yeah, Tadeo Takashima, he's like extremely charismatic, and I feel like he's one of those actors where like, he doesn't have to put any kind of emotion or like any kind of like seeming like effort into his line readings, but it's still always like very compelling and like magnetic kind of, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. It was fun to watch him in this movie.
Yeah, he's got a good presence.
Yeah.
So then Psycho, the lone female in the film, is played by Babari Maeda. And bringing it back to the screenwriter, Kazue Shiba. Psycho, to me, like, it makes sense now that I know that there's a female screenwriter. because Psycho to me is sort of the driving force of the play. Hmm. This is my good category as well. I think she is there for eye candy for the male audience, but as a character, I feel like she is smarter than all the men. She knows what's going on. She has this air of independence.
Yeah, I would agree with that up until the ending, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, I like that reading. She's a very, you empathize with her very much. Yeah.
Yeah. Hiroshi Sakita, Saiji Onaka, and good old Haruo Nakajima as Godzilla. And then rounding out those special effects with the suit acting, Marchan the Dwarf, as he was billed. I've also seen Little Man Marchan. I don't know which is better or worse, but he plays Manila, and he actually goes on to reprise this role in All Monsters Attack and Destroy All Monsters. There's your main cast, rounded it out, headed by Jun Fukuda.
Awesome. Should we mention Bandits Emporium real quick?
Yes, Bandits Emporium is the official t-shirt partner of Camp Kaiju. You can find a cool selection of monster-inspired t-shirts. I'm hoping to get some more for season 3. It'd be cool to get a King Kong in there, some sort of maybe an Ultraman cyborg thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe the cockroach from Mimic? That'd be my suggestion.
Ooh, gross. I like it.
Yeah, I'm sort of kidding, but not really.
No, but I like it. Yeah.
But yeah, we have a lot to choose from.
Yeah. So you can visit banditsemporium.com or hit the link in our bio. That's podcast, Instagram. Any other place where you can find us, you can find banditsemporium.com. Give them some love. Proceeds do support this podcast as well. So we always appreciate that. And as they say, we sell shirts. As Camp Kaiju says, bugs are cool.
That is what we say.
Yes. And Son of Godzilla is full of them.
Yeah. It's kind of surprisingly, but it's a pleasant surprise.
How did you feel about the other kaiju in this film outside of Godzilla?
Really fun. I actually read that those other kaiju, the praying mantises and the giant spider, were not part of Kazue Shiba's original draft of the screenplay, and they were added later by Shinichi Sekizawa. I just think that's kind of interesting. Mm. I think they're really fun. I think the special effects are great. My other fear aside from mushrooms is spiders. I'm revealing a lot about my phobias tonight. Those are like my two big fears. So the giant spider in this movie is very creepy, and it has this like stinger that like comes out. Sort of like the alien face in the movie Alien, like the thing that comes out and eats your brain. The giant spider Kumonga is very gross to me, very terrifying. I mean, I know it's cheesy and campy to an extent, but like still, it's a giant spider. I'm going to be terrified by it. So yeah, and they, you know, like in general, the different like it's never really explained why there are like giant praying mantises and a giant spider on this island, and that's kind of okay. We don't really need like a logical explanation of that, and it just kind of adds to like the danger and the intrigue on the island. So I think it's a lot of fun. It works really well.
Cool. I like that. I like that you're, yeah, I mean, call me sick, but I like that you're afraid of spiders. I'm not in that way, so I don't know. Kumonga doesn't do it for me.
Yeah,
but just compared to like, you know, other kaiju like Ghidorah and Mothra and Rodan, I felt like it's kind of a downscale to just portray a spider and praying mantises.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I feel like the priority or like the focus in this movie is certainly like the Godzilla and Manila relationship. So I sort of feel like the other kaiju are like secondary in a way. So I was kind of okay with that lack of like, you know, wild imagination or whatever. Like they kind of just seem like background danger, and I'm kind of okay with that in this movie.
Yeah, and the way they interact with the humans I really like too. There's there's sort of an immediate sense of danger, like when Goro and Psycho are hiding in a crevice from Kumonga, and Kumonga's like reaching its leg in to try to fish him out.
Yeah,
I love that. Like if I'm a 10-year-old watching this movie, that's money there. I love that kind of thrill, that kind of adventure.
Yeah, totally. There's another part where Goro and Psycho are running away from the praying mantises. One of them is on fire, because Godzilla has like attacked it with its atomic ray or whatever. And the mantis kind of like explodes a little bit, and there's like a flaming praying mantis leg that just like flies over the human characters. And it's awesome. It's so cool. It's one of my favorite parts of this movie.
I love how every time in this movie they like superimpose, or whatever the technical term is, humans in the foreground, and then there's the kaiju in the background. And it's cool to see that kind of scale, because then you get the monsters on that the scale they should be on. Like when Godzilla comes ashore for the first time.
Yeah.
Two little humans are running on the beach down below. Like, it looks a little dated now, the special effects, but it's still a really cool to see, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks dated in the way where, like, it kind of just, like, adds to, like, the fantastic element of it, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, there were quite a number of those shots, especially with Manila and Psycho. They form a relationship, and they're on screen sometimes at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's charming in a campy, dated sort of way.
Absolutely. All the moments where a Psycho like cuts fruit from a tree, it's like a big gourd kind of, and then like throws it directly into the mouth of Manila. It's like so ridiculous. It's not at all convincing, but it's very, very funny.
But it's good.
Yeah. So Toho Studios kind of had a higher end release that came out in 1967, King Kong Escapes. And that's the movie that they kind of devoted a lot of their budget and sort of their A-list talent to. Director Ishiro Honda and composer Akira Ifukube worked on that film instead. So Son of Godzilla, you know, maybe this sounds a little bit impolite, but it was kind of the second string artists at Toho that were assigned to this one, which, you know, I mean, like still great artists and very creative, very capable, obviously, in their own right, worked on this movie. The idea for the baby Godzilla was kind of to appeal to the date crowd. This was like younger couples that were going to the movies a lot of the time, so it was basically just a way to broaden the appeal of the Godzilla series. And you know, the producers, this is maybe a little bit overly simplistic, but they thought that the baby Godzilla would be cute and charming to female viewers, so they were trying to get that demographic to come see the Godzilla films as well.
That's interesting. What's fascinating to me is your first point about this movie versus King Kong Escapes. Why their A-list team wasn't a Godzilla picture. Godzilla had been the moneymaker, but suddenly Toho decides we'll throw our weight behind a King Kong movie instead.
Was that, you know, I have to admit, like, the box office history of the Godzilla series I'm not super familiar with, but I did think that by the late 60s the Godzilla movies were doing a little bit worse, and they kind of were like had been tapering off for a while. Is that true?
That is true, and that's why we have a lower production budget on Son of Godzilla that started with Ebera. So we had Invasion of Astro Monster, which is one of my all-time favorites. It's an outer space adventure. Like the budget to that is huge, but it didn't make as much money as the preceding films. So Toho decides, let's scale down. Let's just, instead of cityscapes, we're going to set the movie on an island. So, you know, it's just inherently cheaper. So that started with Ebera. It continued with Son of Godzilla. So yes, you are correct. There were leaner box office returns, but I didn't realize King Kong Escapes. I don't know. Like in my mind, it's still not the same as Godzilla.
For sure. And in my limited experience, that definitely seems true as well. Yeah. I am totally unversed in the Toho King Kong movies. So that's definitely something we should bring to the podcast.
I've been wanting to save King Kong versus Godzilla for when we get closer to the Godzilla versus Kong movie.
Yeah.
In a couple years. Still doing this. Maybe we'll talk about King Kong versus Godzilla.
Stay tuned. Yeah. For 2025. I'm just kidding. I actually don't know when that movie's coming out.
I think they just wrapped filming and they just released the title. It's called Godzilla and Kong.
Okay. So it might be more of a partnership than an antagonism, perhaps.
Right. So they're teaming up against some greater force. What that is, we don't know yet.
Cool. Well, I'm excited for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, this does seem like kind of a period of transition for Toho for the Godzilla movies in the late 60s. Because even like the early 70s movies, you can tell they're like you know, they don't have the same kind of budgets or like production resources that earlier films did. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, and I think you also see that just in the sense that they like seemingly were kind of desperate to like bring more people to the theaters and like for that reason brought in like the cute baby Godzilla, you know, like, yeah.
It does feel like a jump the shark moment.
Yeah.
Whenever a movie is like, here's the son of your character or the daughter, which there aren't enough of those, but yeah, it's just like desperate a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'll probably talk more about that in my bad category for the recap of this movie, but yeah, interesting subtext for sure. Context for the production.
The new Godzilla suit. Well, there was a new Godzilla suit built for this film because they needed to make the Godzilla suit larger compared to the Manila suit. Suddenly they had to upscale Godzilla just to make that scale work a little bit more. The Godzilla suit is given bigger eyes and a shorter snout in this film. The end result is a little less scary, maybe a little bit more human, but maybe also just a little more clunky.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah, so new suit, new intention behind the suit.
You know, I think it's interesting that, like, we see Godzilla in, like, the opening scene of this movie, like, emerging from the ocean and kind of almost knocking this airplane out of the sky. And it looks, like, pretty intense, you know, and pretty foreboding. And then, like, half an hour later, maybe, when we see Godzilla again, it looks, it looks very cuddly, very charming, like, you know. So I think, like, different appearances of Godzilla in this movie have different impressions or leave different impressions.
Yeah, just the, you know, there's so many ways, so many directorial choices that can go into influencing how we feel about what we're seeing.
Yeah, and I think just the story too, like when we first see Godzilla, like we don't know what's going on, we just see it threatening this airplane, and then the next time we see it, it's like responding to like the cries of like a newly hatched infant, so you know that makes it seem less intense for sure.
That's true. And then some background about Manila. Manila was based on a popular manga character called Chibata.
Delicious.
From a manga called Osumatsu-kun. I've never read that. I would be interested in looking into that just to see some more, I don't know, influence about Son of Godzilla. Because although Manila in this film is often lambasted, the character of Godzilla's son has lived on. Even in the Heisei era, the character is reintroduced. It does look more like its father, which is a very welcomed relief. But the character endures. So there is something to it.
I read that it's especially popular in Japan, right? And kind of always has been. Whereas like, maybe it gets more criticism from American critics. But yeah, like there's criticism in other parts of the world for the Manila character. But from what I've read, it's always been very popular in Japan.
Did you want to talk about your favorite kaiju Kumonga?
Yeah, absolutely. So the puppet and the suitmation work in this movie is extremely impressive. 20 puppeteers were often working on various marionettes at one time. In particular, Kumonga. That puppet needed 2 to 3 people at a time to operate each leg. So just like a massive undertaking. And it works really well in the film. Like, it, you know, you can't really see the wires all that much. I wouldn't say it's like realistic per se, but it's convincing in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of scenes that were shot for the film, but were ultimately deleted. A lot of them actually showed Godzilla being mean or harsh to Manila, its own child in some ways. One sequence at the end shows Godzilla leaving Manila behind on the freezing Salgal Island and making it to shore before turning back. More deleted footage had Godzilla expecting the newborn Manila to get up and walk after the Kamakuras have been defeated. Another showed Godzilla headbutting its son to make him stop following Psycho. And yet another one has... this is kind of unrelated, but another deleted scene shows Manila being able to fire his own type of atomic breath during his fight with the Kamakuras. So a lot of footage was originally shot and then deleted from the film.
It's interesting that so much of that footage is just more abuse towards Manila.
Yeah.
I think there's just enough of it in this film to work. For me, it gives it a rather slapstick feel. But if you push it, if you just make the whole film about kicking this little kid, it becomes a kind of a different movie. So maybe a good choice that they cut a bunch of that out.
Yeah, I think so. It kind of reminded me of the movie The Kid by Charlie Chaplin with Jackie Coogan, I think, is the child actor's name. Which, you know, there's kind of this, like, love-hate sort of all semi-abusive relationship between them in the movie. But, of course, they, like, you know, have this bond by the end of it or whatever. So it was a weird comparison that I was not expecting.
So the film was released in Japan in December of 1967. It did get a Western release in the UK in August 1969 on a double bill with the aforementioned Ebra Horror of the Deep. It was only released in the US on TV, actually, in 1969. So it never did get a theatrical release, which wasn't unusual for, you know, Toho films at this time. I think I might have seen it on TV when I was a kid once in a while, like the USA Network. remember that, would play Godzilla movies once in a while. But it was often like the kid-friendly ones.
Right, yeah. I know I've seen Manila, the son of Godzilla. Like, I've seen that character and that puppet before. Like, it's such a clear image in my mind. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's just from, like, you know, publicity stills or, like, knowledge of the film. Or if I saw it when I was, like, 10 years old and totally forgot about it. Either one could be a guess.
Cultural osmosis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a weird-looking baby Godzilla, though, for sure. It stays with you.
There's a line when Goro says, "Oh, it looks like a baby Godzilla." And my first, without a beat, I said out loud to the TV, "Does it?" Because it doesn't look anything like Godzilla.
No, it does not. No. Maybe it'll grow into it.
I know, but then you like think about Godzilla, you know, canon, and you're like, what? Is that how my favorite King of the Monsters was born?
Right.
It kind of changes everything.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if this is a good time to bring this up, but one of my like huge questions with this movie is like, how did this happen? Like, what is the parentage of Manila? Like, is Godzilla actually the father biologically, or is it more of like an adopted son situation? If he actually is the biological father, who is the mate? Like, who is the mother? Can Godzilla reproduce asexually if he is the biological father? Or is he actually a female or asexual? Just so many questions are asked by this whole situation. And I don't think the movie like ever, you know, it definitely does not attempt to answer those questions. And maybe that's okay. I don't think he really wants to, but I just could not really like get over that, you know? Like, what's going on here?
It begs the question. I think you're totally right. It's not the tone, like the movie's tone does not, like it's not going to explore that. Mm-hmm. But now fan theory, I have heard that both of those, that this is an adopted parent-child relationship, mm-hmm. and or Godzilla is an asexual creature. And that is explored a bit more in sort of offshoot media, that Godzilla just kind of evolves like a lot of reptiles do in the natural world.
Cool idea. Like, I kind of wish more of the Godzilla movies would explore that possibility a little bit more.
The next Godzilla movie we talk about, I don't know what it's going to be, but we should dive into the later Heisei era with that version of Baby Godzilla. Baby Godzilla is used more integral to the plot. The character becomes actually important to the story, the overarching story. And those films are connected. So you see a nice through line starting to develop with the character.
Because I feel like there is potential to like, yeah, develop something interesting with this father-son dynamic and explore their relationship. But this movie only goes so far in doing that, you know?
Right. So we can talk about that now in terms of themes. You know, I think the main theme is I'm not a father, but we all have a father, even if, you know, depending on your relationship, whether or not that father was always there, we've all had a father figure in our lives. And maybe, I don't know, maybe you can relate to this relationship between Manila and Godzilla. Where do you like you're trying to impress your dad and it's not going very well. Or you like, you do something really stupid. Like in my case, you know, I spilled a bucket of paint once. My dad yelled at me. Because he told me, don't spill this or something, like, and then I did it and I went, damn it.
Yeah, I've done similar things. I feel like we've all been there. Many of us have been there. I remember biking with my dad once and trying to like show off a little bit, and then like almost like biking in oncoming traffic, and he was not very happy with me about that. So we've all been there.
Yeah.
And yeah, like we see it in this movie for sure. Like, you know, the part we kind of alluded to this before, but where like Godzilla steps on Manila's tail to like force it to like actually shoot its like atomic ray or whatever. That was kind of like a funny tough love moment. You know, I thought that worked.
Right. Tough love that worked. In Manila's case, he was able to produce the atomic breath he needed to.
Right.
Which eventually saves his life because he has to fight the Kamakuras by himself.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think so. I think he tries to use the atomic breath on Kumonga, but it doesn't work very well. And then Godzilla has to come save the day, if I remember right. Yeah.
Right, right. Sometimes you still need your parents to come help you out.
Yeah, maybe that's the ultimate moral of the story.
Yeah.
I do kind of wish that theme was like reflected in the human characters a little bit more, because like... Mm-hmm. We get it a little bit with the character of Psycho, because when we learn her backstory, she, like, her mom died giving birth to her, and then her dad died shortly thereafter, and then Psycho just like has lived alone on this island for, we don't know exactly how long, but at least a decade, quite a while, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, like that theme is kind of there a little bit, like losing your parents, or like sort of, you know, the difficulty of finding your way through the world on your own, that kind of thing. But it's definitely not pronounced, and I wish there was a little bit more like elaboration of that theme.
Maybe I would be more keen on seeing a father-daughter relationship, because we get like a, I think like kind of a half-baked will they won't they with Goro and Psycho.
Yeah,
which is like so fine.
Right.
What might have been more interesting is Psycho having a father figure, maybe in the professor, who takes her under his wing and becomes that mentor that she didn't have growing up because her father died. I would be more interested in seeing that, I think.
Yeah, totally agree. And that, you know, again, that would kind of like parallel the Godzilla-Manila relationship a little bit more too. So
right, right.
Yeah, like the, you know, there is the moment where Goro tells Psycho, like, I'm going to go back to Tokyo and you're coming with me. And she's like very delighted. And that's supposed to be kind of like the happy ending, like the happy romantic union between the two of them, you know?
Yeah.
But it doesn't really seem very happy for her. Like she has to leave her home that she's been in her entire life for this guy, you know, that she barely knows. Like,
right.
I don't know. I just feel like there's a little bit of, the movie wants us to believe that it's a happy ending that they end up together, but it's like, oh dude, you're just like forcing this woman to leave her home to go back to Tokyo, and what if she hates it? What if, like, you know, yeah. What if you have nothing in common? So I feel kind of bad for Psycho at the end of this movie. I don't know how it's going to work out for her.
Well, I see what you mean. Like, I like a lot of the character traits of Psycho. Mm-hmm. However, you know, it's still a movie made by men, and I'm still a movie, you know, with such a male gaze, which, you know, isn't like inherently bad, but it does kind of reflect in some of those choices where it's like, oh, Goro, who offers nothing really, he's such a nitwit.
Yeah.
Somehow he gets the girl and convince, you know, it's just like, I'm not really buying it. It's a kid's movie, sure. But, you know, come on, Goro.
Yeah. I want a little more feminine empowerment, you know?
She's like, why don't you stay on the island with me?
Exactly. Like that, that would be an interesting ending, I think. Although I guess then they have to like live through the like nuclear winter or whatever that happens at the end of the movie. So that would be a little bit difficult, but
that's true. So maybe Psycho should leave the island.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah. You've convinced me.
We're just the bending ourselves into knots to justify Son of Godzilla.
Yeah. This movie will do that to you.
I do like the theme of in regards of the human characters. I do think it is actually a worthwhile theme they tackle in terms of overpopulation, of famine, and they want to like create a weather changing device in order to basically terraform otherwise uninhabitable landscapes. That's a more complicated subplot than this movie deserves, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, totally agree. I think that's fascinating. And I think in most ways, this movie could not be any more different than the original 1954 Godzilla. But in that theme, I think it actually has a lot of similarities, like this theme of, you know, should humans invent a device that could wreak mass destruction and just like chaos and devastation, even if it's like well-intentioned or for like ultimately like good purposes or like noble purposes. You know, that theme is in the original and kind of in this movie too. So I did appreciate that connection for sure.
Yeah. You always have to think about the unintended consequences of science.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. It's all very surface level. Of course, they don't really dig deep into the morality of such meddlings with the natural world.
Yeah.
But it is mentioned. So I guess that is something.
Yeah, and I think like when the weather device does work near the end and like suddenly this tropical island is like covered in snow and cold temperatures and, you know, there's this montage right before like the weather device goes off where it's like close-ups of these different creatures, Godzilla and Manila and also the Kamakuras and Kumonga. You know, it's supposed to be a happy ending that like the evil kaiju are destroyed. Godzilla and Manila are going to hibernate and they're going to be fine. But it still seems kind of melancholy that all these animals are going to be like severely affected by this going on, you know?
Right.
And I feel like the ending is like surprisingly melancholy when Godzilla and Manila are like embracing each other when they're like going into their hibernation.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's an intentional kind of like, this seems like a happy ending, but maybe it's not really. But it's interesting. I think it works pretty well.
That ending alone elevates this film for me because it is such a different note. Like you say, it's melancholic compared to the jaunty adventure we've had before.
Yeah.
That speaks to me. And it's just like, oh, wow. After all the the beatings and the laughter, at the end of the day, we're left with an image of a father holding his son. And I'm like, oh, that's really touching.
It is. Totally agree that ending makes it worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Just thinking about form and aesthetic, you know, just segueing nicely from the end there. In terms of the contrast with the rest of the movie, the rest of the movie is very bright and colorful. I was struck immediately by that cinematography. And I was like, oh, wow, I can get sucked into this world. This is a fun, vivid, colorful world.
Yeah, it looks amazing. Like the set, like the island sort of like research lab or whatever with like bright yellow buildings and like bright green foliage and the bright blue sky, like all of it. I would just like, I want to eat up those images. They're great.
Absolutely. And then the music, I think the music adds so much. It is goofy. It is jaunty. And it fits the tone really well.
You know, like when Manila first hatches from the egg and is like immediately attacked by these praying mantises, like I still feel like the music is kind of like goofy and jaunty. And it's like, oh, I don't know if the music works as well for this scene, but I, you know, it's a weird contradiction. I was okay with it.
Yeah, no, that's true. I was watching that scene and just thinking about how abusive the Kamakuras are to Manila. Like, ostensibly, they want to eat Manila, but they take their sweet time poking him and hitting him. And it's like, if they want to eat him, they should just eat him right now.
Right. It's intense. You definitely feel for that baby, like, immediately unleashed into this cruel world, you know?
Godzilla does let him learn the hard way a couple times.
Yeah, that is true.
Okay, anything else before you want to go into our breakdowns?
You know, I just think the special effects are like, a lot of fun in this movie, as we've already talked about. And like the kind of like artificiality of the sets, like sometimes you can see like the folds or the fabric and like the sky, you know, where it's obviously like a blue curtain or a blue backdrop. And I love that. I love when it's like a tactile feeling, when it doesn't look realistic, but it looks so like over the top and so fanciful. I sort of feel like a movie like this should look like that, you know, it should have that kind of like extravagant aesthetic. So I appreciated that about it.
That's the same in Frankenstein. You remember that at the end?
Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't talk about that in that episode, but that's something I heard from people like Ellen. It took her out of it a little bit to see a clearly painted screen on the background.
Yeah, I understand that. You know, like, it's not really very convincing or realistic, but just like visually and stylistically, I think it looks great. And, you know, I feel like seemingly every episode I kind of like lambast CGI a little bit, but I'm just going to repeat that this time because I would much rather see this kind of like tactile work than like CGI, which is, you know, that's even less convincing to me. So I'll take this any day.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm happy to get to our breakdown if you are.
Yeah, let's do it.
Excellent. So we have the good, the bad, and the downright campy. For the good, I've said it a lot. I think Fukuda's direction is brisk and tight. I don't think the film ever drags, which is nice because sometimes some of these, especially at this time period, you have Ebra, Horror of the Deep, you have All Monsters Attack. There are some Godzilla movies that can drag a little bit. I think this one hits the pacing really well. I think the score helps a lot with that. And I think the physical humor between Godzilla and Manila just takes the cake. I think that it's slapstick. I think it's hilarious, maybe because it's relatable, but it just cracks me up. I laugh out loud every time I watch this movie.
That's great. That's so good to hear. Yeah. And that's ultimately the point, right? It's definitely a comedy first and foremost, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Adventure comedy.
Yeah, and I totally agree about how like brisk and like quickly moving it is. I think a good example of that is the fact that Goro just appears suddenly in the movie by like parachuting onto the island. And it's like he just had a hunch that like something was going on here. We never understand more about like what led him there or anything. And I love that. Like, it's just like, we're going to introduce this character for like, we're not really going to explain it. He just like parachutes in. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I already talked about a lot of the things that are in my good category, but there was one more I wanted to mention, which is the scene where the first time they try the weather device, it kind of goes horribly awry, and this like radioactive balloon explodes, and it makes it like extremely hot on the island, like dangerously hot. And like after that happens, there's this weird psychedelic trippy image of just like nuclear radiation or something like spreading over the island. And like a voiceover narration that comes out of nowhere that's explaining what's going on as we kind of like flash forward a couple weeks. And it's weird. It's unexpected. And that might not always be a good thing about a movie. But in this case, I loved it. I was like, I was not expecting this image or like this weird narrative break right here. And I'm totally into it. I can't wait to see what happens next. So I love that moment.
It's funny you say that. The narration threw me off personally. I just felt like a different movie all of a sudden, which, you know. Yeah, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It just threw me off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally get that. I think like, you know, like I thought I knew where it was going. Like, all right, we got the scientists on the island. Godzilla's going to show up. And then that happened. And I was like, whoa, I did not see that coming. So
actually, I think that narration segment, like to me, that was a cooler version of this movie that I wanted to see.
Yeah.
And then it went away and we went back to happy kid fun time. And I was like, okay, well, I would like to see that other movie, please.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just imagine that in our heads, I guess.
Yeah. It's like a documentary almost.
Yeah, about nuclear nuclear fallout.
What didn't you like about this movie?
I have to say I'm probably in the anti-Manila camp. I don't think I'm a big fan of the character. I did like some of the slapstick stuff. Some of it is funny and amusing, but it does feel pretty desperate to me. You know, it feels like kind of a marketing ploy. Like, how can we try to get as many, like, as wide of a demographic into movie theaters as possible? And I think a lot of that kind of goes back to what I was saying before. Like, there's not really an attempt to, like, convey a theme about parenthood or childhood all that much, because I think, like, that's not really presented through the human characters all that much. So to me, it did kind of seem like, you know, again, just like a gimmick, a marketing ploy. Yeah. And, you know, I couldn't, again, I alluded to this a little bit before, but I couldn't help but think of like the sort of, dark, sobering intention of the original Godzilla or even Shin Godzilla, which we just talked about recently, really great movie. and is of course like very, you know, it kind of imagines what would happen if like Godzilla did break loose in like an actual sort of bureaucracy in like our modern world or whatever. So I guess it's his personal preference, but I prefer that kind of like dark, sobering intent more than like the wacky, family-friendly vibe that we have here.
I think that's valid. I think that that is a lot of people's interpretation. Yeah, this era, these few years of the Godzilla universe, it's so far from the original messaging of the film. It can be a hard pill to swallow if that's what you're into. I guess for me, I just kind of take it for what it is. Mm-hmm. I've learned to love both sides of Godzilla. Sometimes he can be scary, and then sometimes he can be the hero. So I don't know. I just take it for what it is, but I hear you. What I don't like about this movie just comes back to the suit design. I think Manila's suit is gross. I don't understand what they're going for. I don't think there's any intelligent thought given behind the suit. Now the character is different. I like the character, but the suit is ugly and doesn't work. It doesn't look like Godzilla. I don't need to go on. But then the Godzilla suit itself, like, I get it. You can try to make it look more friendly, but the way it comes off in this film, it looks drunk. Like someone just didn't do it right. The eyes are misshapen, or like there's something off about the face that makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree. It just looks too silly and goofy, I think, in this movie. And, you know, there, even if it's kind of like the more heroic Godzilla, there should be an element of monstrosity, I think, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think there is enough of that in this movie.
No, and I think it's a reflection of the budget as well.
Yeah.
The suit just doesn't look as finely tuned as it has before.
Right.
It looks cheaper.
And I totally agree about the Manila suit, and that's probably a big reason why I didn't like the character all that much. It actually reminded me of the infant from the TV sitcom Dinosaurs, which is like in the from the early 90s, you know?
Yep.
And that's probably like an unfair comparison, but like that might be yet another reason I didn't like the character all that much. I just kept on thinking about that TV show. It's not the movie's fault, but...
Right, but it's distracting. Like, the design distracts from an otherwise, I think, okay character... And, you know, what the character is doing, I'm fine with. What the character looks like, I'm not okay with.
Yeah, that's a good distinction, yeah. And I should probably, I think this will happen as I watch more Godzilla movies. I think I will be more open-minded to, like, you know, the fun, campy, silly Godzilla and, like, the mean, intense, brooding Godzilla. Mm-hmm. I probably will learn to love both of them, you know?
Right, right. Well, Son of Godzilla is a good first exposure. Okay, campy stuff. What? I mean, there's so much. So much. I just like how to whittle it down to one thing.
Yeah.
For me, it's when Manila is trying to blow his smoke rings of atomic breath, which that in and of itself is campy. They're smoke rings. But then when Godzilla steps on his tail to get the desired effect, it's just too good for me. It's too silly. I can't not love it.
That is a great moment. And like the part where like Manila is like jumping, like hopping over his dad's tail. Like, that's funny. I like that stuff. That's pretty campy and silly. There is some dialogue that I really love in this movie for its campy vibe. And I also watched the English dub of this movie. So that probably like added to the appeal for me. I'll just read a couple of them real quick. There are a lot of examples in the movie, but one of my favorite examples is one of the scientists says this when he's like very disgruntled at the beginning of the movie. He says, "I feel like I'm in a concentration camp. Boy, I could sure use a can of cold beer." and that, you know, combining those two things just is an awkward contradiction.
Yep, I remember that line.
The other one that I wanted to bring up is when somebody says, "Professor, are you going to try to freeze this island?" And the professor responds by saying, "Don't ask so many questions." There's two examples of the wonderful dialogue in this movie.
Yeah, I also remember that.
And I know it sounds like I'm kind of making fun of it a little bit, but it's very entertaining. I love that vibe.
I agree. There's a lot of lines like that I think we could devote a whole episode to reading the script of this movie.
Maybe an upcoming Patreon episode, Patreon special.
Ooh, hey, if we get enough, if we get three more patrons by the time of our next episode, Matt and I will read the screenplay of Son of Godzilla.
I really hope that happens. That would be so fun.
Amazing. Okay. This has been a lot of fun. I think we can go to our rating.
All right. So first and best we have, it is a timeless classic. It definitely stands the test of time. Our second rating is, there may be some antiquated moments, but overall it's great and it stands the test of time. Our third rating is, it may be historically significant or just fun, but it does not stand the test of time. And finally, the worst rating, it is not worth revisiting. It definitely does not stand the test of time.
Okay. I think I can go a couple of ways here. But, you know, I don't know. Do you want to go first? I feel like because I've seen every Godzilla movie, I might have a different perspective than you, which is great. I love that. Yeah. This is your first time watching Son of Godzilla.
Yeah, I'll go first also because I feel like you might sway my opinion if you go first. So I will say that for me, this movie was historically, maybe not historically significant. I guess in its own way it was. It is fun. It definitely is fun. But to me, it does not stand the test of time. It's not one of my favorite Godzilla movies that I've seen. Obviously, like everything, that's very subjective. And I just feel like I prefer a different kind of Godzilla style. Yeah, so that's my rating.
I love it. I think that's completely valid. If this was one of the few Godzilla movies I would have seen, I would say the same thing. Because I have seen so many others, I could put it in a different context. This might blow you away. I think it's a classic, and it stands the test of time.
Cool. I'm happy to hear that.
Because of when it came out in the Godzilla franchise, in hindsight, I think it is a bright spot. So, I don't know, of those, it's like the best of the worst, if you will. And for that, it has rewatch value for me, and I think it's a classic.
I'm excited to hopefully get to the point where I feel the same way when I watch like the vast majority of the Godzilla movies, which hopefully, you know, I will be doing soon with you on this podcast. So I can't wait.
Listeners, let us know how you feel about Son of Godzilla. The internet is divided. Matt and I are divided, but we can all come together as Godzilla fans.
That's what Camp Kaiju is all about. Harmony.
All strange beasts welcome.
Yeah.
The next movie we're going to talk about, though, is not a Godzilla film. It is related. Well, we're going to feature what I am not wrong in saying is one of the Mount Rushmore of Kaiju, the other big G, the flying turtle himself, Gamera, Gamera, Gamera. We have not brought Gamera to the podcast yet, which I feel like is a tragedy, but we're rectifying that. This month, we're going to talk about specifically Gamera versus Gauss from 1967. It's the third film in the series.
I can't wait. It sounds so awesome. Like you describing the plot of it before, like this is right up my alley, I think. So cannot wait.
And thank you all for hanging out. If you liked what you heard, please tell a friend, leave a rating and review, and visit CampKaijuMovieReviews.com, Instagram, or even Patreon for more monster movie content. Links in our bio. We can't thank you enough. Camp Kaiju is recorded with your help in the Twin Cities with music by Terrence Jackson. Oh, and before I forget, Camp Kaiju is sponsored by BanditsEmporium.com, where you can shop exclusive monster-inspired t-shirts with part of those proceeds supporting this show. BanditsEmporium.com. Find the link in our bio. As they say, we sell shirts. And again, as Camp Kaiju says, thank you, friends. And until next time, stay campy.
You don't need need to be bigger than life to be a good dad. You just need to spend time with your kids. It takes a man to be a dad.